and welcome to the International Trade Resource Podcast, your go-to source for insights and information on all aspects of international trade. Whether you're an entrepreneur, a trade professional, or just curious about the global marketplace, we've got you covered. From customs regulations to export strategies, from emerging markets to international finance, we explore the latest trends and best practices that drive global commerce. Our host, Kim Kirkendall, sits down with a diverse range of experts who navigate the complex world of international trade and help you stay ahead of the game. So get ready to learn about the ins and outs of international trade on the International Trade Resource Podcast.
Hello, listeners. I'd love to welcome you to another episode of International Trade Resources Podcast. And we're really excited today to have as our topic trade between North America, within North America, between Canada, US, and Mexico, specifically USMCA, which is the new NAFTA, and compliance issues that occur when trade is crossing that border. And our guest speaker today is Alejandro Alcalde, and I'd like to welcome him to the podcast. Welcome, Alejandro.
Thank you very much, Kimberly. Thank you for having me here.
Alejandro is a real seasoned professional in international trade, customs, and compliance. He's got background in tax compliance, trade compliance, global logistics, business optimization, over 20 years in a variety of fields, manufacturing, banking, consulting. He's working right now at the UNIVA Law School in Mexico to get his trade lawyer diploma and consecutively attending the Mexico Trade and Law College in California, Mexico, to get a degree on international business and customs law. So if you have questions on these topics, clearly this is the person you're going to go to. You know, very experienced, very experienced. So the first thing I want to start with is the USMCA was passed and, you know, Americans like to call it the new NAFTA, right? So let's first talk a little bit about how has it changed, you know, trade with Mexico, the US and Canada, but also specifically compliance for international trade.
Yeah, well, basically, there have been a lot of changes. It's basically a modernization of the treaty. It's been a lot of good things that have been happening to this treaty. The initial treaty had more than 30 years since the first time it was signed and was subscribed. And I would say this particular 3 years have represented a real challenge since the economic condition has been experienced. Starting with COVID, with the container crisis in the logistics costs increased, the geopolitical changes and all that happened globally speaking. But generally speaking, the treaty has represented a lot of opportunities on this region with these new provisions and the things for trademarking and a new very good provisions that have been helping companies to improve. However, good things for the workers, for companies, those are positive things that are happening. Unfortunately, things have been delayed a little bit, the changes to happen.
So the implementation has been delayed?
Yes.
Okay, interesting. So, you know, I think most import and export compliance people in the U.S. are familiar with the issues that happen between China and the United States because UFLPA and a lot of these other regulations that have been coming out, they may be more experienced with what's happening between India and the US and Canada. But I think less people underestimate sometimes that there's still a lot of regulation about trade that's occurring between Mexico and, you know, its northern partners. So can you talk a little bit about the trade compliance challenges that we're seeing between Mexico and its northern partners?
Yes, well, it's been very interesting what is happening because years back, particularly with NAFTA, the trade environment, especially on the U.S. southern border and the Mexico northern border, was just concentrated on the NAFTA rules, for instance, and origin. Speaking on origin, everybody was concentrated on checking the origin rules. Today, we have a lot of factors. For instance, since what happened with President Trump tariffs for the Section 301 on the USTR, that phenomenon created a new total environment on origin, because now we have conditions when we had to run qualifications of origins on the USTR rules, which is a total thing to prove that the product qualifies or was substantially transforming the region. But it's a total thing that we need to prove that qualifies as an origin under USMCA rules. From the other hand, we have the rules of origin of CBP, which are the CFR 1920, which are totally different. And subsequently, we have another incentive rules, the Buy American, the TAA, the Solar Energy Manufacturing Act. And we have a lot of different incentive programs. We have the total different regulatory environment from origin. So we thinking on business opportunities and thinking from the origin perspective, it's really important to identify the scope and identify the different target you are playing. It's a totally different portfolio of opportunities, and it's totally diverse, the environment.
So that's interesting. You know, I what I hear you saying is that there are multiple regulations and agencies that are stakeholders, and the regulations are talking about defining the country of origin, and yet they have different definitions. And for our listeners, most of you, I'm sure, understand that country of origin is typically defined by either the value added, you know, how that changes the price of the product, or the function of the product or the nature of the product has fundamentally changed. So if the AHS code has changed, that would be an indication that the country of origin could change. If a certain amount of materials was added to the product, that could be an indication that the country of origin was changed. So can you give us just a quick kind of example on how one of these regulations, USMCA or USTR, or, you know, has a different definition than the other? Because I think this is a really interesting topic.
It's a mix of things, and it's a totally complex environment, because it depends. It's a different things and totally different environment. Because, like I said previously, it was just about to define the value content, right? And it was just as simple as just to go and check the rule that applies and what was the methodology, the origin methodology that was stated on them. But speaking of level of substantial transformation, it's a totally different thing, because if you go to the USTR, the USTR dictates different rules and different provisions that you need to follow in order to apply. So let's say we have a product that qualifies as originated under USMCA. So it's a totally different thing, because the USMCA can help you to mitigate the import duty rate. However, playing under the USTR for mitigating the 301 section tariffs is a different thing. So we probably may have cases where a product may qualify under USMCA, but we need to do a different or additional analysis to mitigate the USTR 301 section tariff rules. So in an advice or in a coordinated or ordinated process, probably what we need to do now is to check the process into, or the product into, number one thing. It's define the tariff code from the U.S. perspective. We used to define it, the tariff code, from the Mexican perspective, thinking into a production. So the analysis will be due to an U.S. importer perspective. Number two is, once we have the U.S. tariff code perspective, it's to check if under the U.S. tariff schedule the product is eligible to pay duties or taxes, and check immediately if the product is listed on the 301 section tariff of the USTR. So speaking of a strategy, we can check if the product is eligible to pay duties and taxes, and then we will define a tariff code process. And based on that, it is that we will run an analysis backwards, or a reverse analysis. There might be cases where we have a duty-free product, but the product is listed on the USTR list. So by having that analysis, we can check the bill of material structure. And if we have 100% of the components from an Asia country or from China, we need to see the manufacturing process integration. And we need to see if the process that we will be running, it's simple assembly, or we do a consistent level of transformation in the third country, in this case, Mexico. Or if the added value we are adding in Mexico, in the third country, will be sufficient to demonstrate that we are transforming the product into a brand new thing. Or if the fact that we are doing a transformation, we are designing a brand new tariff code in the third country. So those are the additional factors that are the ones that will make us successful and consider the product transformed in the third country, in this case, Mexico. So those additional factors are the ones that would give us a certain light.
That's really fascinating. So what I hear you saying basically is that companies should be doing this analysis and assessment before they start, you know, importing any raw materials and goods into Mexico, yes, before they start manufacturing or assembling or whatever it is they're doing, especially if those goods, are 100% made in Mexico, obviously you don't have these issues. But, you know, if any of the raw materials are coming from overseas, if there are any components of coming overseas, you know, you start with defining the HS code, you know, you do this, the analysis and qualification that you've talked about, and then looking deeper down into, you know, the bill of materials manufacturing process. It's really very, very complicated, you know, and I'm sure many companies don't think about doing this until after they've set up the business and the orders and everything's running. And even then they're probably looking, I'd say probably half the companies are only looking at US, you know, the USMCA rules, or, you know, customs rules. They're not really considering the USTR regulations in regards to Section 301. So I'm sure there's a lot of companies who are not, you know, crossing their T's and dotting their I's, as we say, about all of the factors that they need to be considering with this.
Yes, and I can tell you two examples I have on the top of my mind. We had a customer based in Europe. It was in Finland or in Norway, I recall. But they were very organized, and they have a product. There were those tablets used on the hospitals. And they thought they'd invest 70% of their time on designing the product. And with designing the product, designing is planning. Planning is exactly doing these assumptions. So they work with assumptions. Assumption is checking the tariff classifications. So most of the time, you don't have the bill of materials, the structure of the materials approved, the cost of approved. But by having these assumptions or checking, you are an intermediate person or you are assisting a company how to move production from Asia to Mexico to be successful exploring the U.S. market, we can work with assumptions. So by having these assumptions and say, what is your product? How your product works, where is going to be utilized, who is your end customer, we can do these assumptions and we can assume the tariff classification. And by having this classification, we can see if this would be eligible to pay duties, taxes, and this would be eligible for paying these 301 duties. And we can do the analysis backwards and we can do this route of potential duties and taxes. This will give us a route of analysis and take directions in advance. So it is the most important. From the other side, we had a Chinese customer which was producing medical devices and sent medical devices, and they were paying a lot of duties and taxes and asked us for our help. And by doing those analysis, we found that they were paying a lot of duties, because they were paying those 301 duties analysis. So we found an opportunity to make certain adjustments on their supplies, make certain adjustments on their production, the moving production to Mexico, and fun opportunities to do some post-import claimings to the government. It's a different process. It's no guarantee they can have some money back. But yeah, there are certain ways to mitigate these taxes at the end.
I think that's really interesting. I think there's a lot of companies that definitely could benefit from that. Before we kind of move off of some of the compliance challenges, I know you also do a lot of work with IMEX Maquiladora regulations. Can you talk about that a little bit, like how that is, you know, the border crossing, the Maquiladora U.S. border crossings and documentation, and explain that to our listeners a little more?
Yes. Well, another challenging part of this story is what has been happening in Mexico. Because of all of this situation that has been happening in the last, let's say, 4 or 5 years, Mexico has been joining in additional benefits of all this environment because of all this trade war. Because when the commercial conflict between China and U.S. happening, most of the foreign companies is starting translating production from China to Mexico, understanding that transferring production from China to Mexico could have an opportunity to join the benefits of the NAFTA or the USMCA to transform production and eventually mitigate duties and taxes, which initially it represents an opportunity, an idea. However, because of the change of government and because of certain other factors, the maquiladoras had been adjusting their tax structure. Just to give an idea, in the last 3 years, the Mexican government has been implementing around 360 different tax and customs reforms to increase tax collection, to inform trade compliance. One of the most, the biggest challenges or the biggest changes is that last year, the Mexican customs changed from to be part of the Mexican IRS. Now it's an independent office similar to US. It's like a CBP. But in Mexico, it's been militarized. So now we have the Mexican customs. It has been administrated by the army. So it's to go more enforcement to fight the smuggling, to fight the drug cartels, to have more enforcement on that, and to fight the tax evasion and those type of things. And certainly, the rules are more strict in that sense. So because of this, the maquiladoras have been more and more strict on those regulations. It's certainly a thing that has been happening. And it's challenging to advise foreign investors and make them understand the rules, how to invest and how to implement an operation in Mexico and how to be successful in transferring their production into Mexico to eventually make those sales to foreign companies.
That's great. You know, I'm sitting here thinking this is great information, you know, for our listeners to understand the interplay between government, you know, the government's goals and the current administration and, you know, how they're responding and reacting to this. So along with that, it kind of leads me to my next question, which is, how can companies create better procedures, better robust system within their company to be able to adapt to some of these things that you've been talking about?
Yeah, well, fortunately, in difficult times or in challenging times, the companies tend to look at the principles, right? The basics. And in this case, look at the basics is the best we can do for be successful. Like in this case, the best we can do is to anticipate all the changes. Number one thing is I would recommend everyone that would like to explore North America or Latin America or Americas as an opportunity to expand businesses is understand the business, understand the product, understand the customers, take the time to design your business, financial flows, understand who will be buying, who will be selling, who will be receiving, and who will be paying. That's truly important because it's where everything starts and it's everything where everything ends. Number two, it's identify what will be the target market in America. If the intention for the investor or the company is to do B2B, for instance, if the target market for a foreign investor, if you are a company, a Chinese company, a European company, or a foreign investor trying to do business in America, selling to companies, or if you want to penetrate the market to end customers, that's a totally different environment. And there are different incentive programs for selling to companies than to selling to end customers. The other thing is what type of services you will do. You will do repairs, refurbishing, or you will be satisfying the market to selling spare market, spare parts. Another thing is either the intention is to do sales to government. There is a huge opportunity to do sales to governments. There are a lot of incentives, tax incentives. However, they have their own complexity and their own regulations. If the sales would be to North America only, to US and Canada, they are easier than to sell to Latin America, for instance, to do sales to Mexico. Speaking to sales to Mexico, there might be, like we already said, maquiladoras have their own complexity. However, Mexico offers an amazing opportunity to use Mexico as a hub to penetrate the Latin America government. Mexico is a country that has the largest number of treaties around the world. They have treaties with more than 45 countries and offers an opportunity to, same as we do with the USMCA, send your production to Mexico, but do the same for Europe, for instance, WEFTA. I mean, the second largest treaty that Mexico has is with the European Union. But also it has another important treaty with Brazil and South America, with Asia. So Mexico has a large presence in an open economy, which can often offer very good advantages. Or if we can use Mexico to do re-exports, it's a good opportunity. However, we need to take care speaking of re-exports, for compliance with embargo sanctions and OFAC and those type of regulations. So that's important too. Number one thing is, what is the target market? What do we want to do in America? That's the number one thing. Number two is, what type of products we have? What type of industry? The automotive industry offers a bunch of opportunities right now. However, there are a lot of regulations and incentives. Medical industry offers also a lot of incentives. So that's what I would recommend the investors to draw, number one. Then look for a good group of partners. If there are good companies or good level of companies, have a good advisor, external advisor, or someone that can take you from a hand and understand the regulatory content that may apply in the different countries, in Mexico or in the US. The customs brokers are the best advisors because of their business. And the customs brokers live from their broker licenses and from their licenses. I mean, are the perfect. But if not, it's important to have a group of advisors. And once they understand the business, the flows, the industry, and what they need to do is to understand the regulations and do this type of analysis first. So anticipate what can happen in advance, what can happen in terms of duties, taxes, and enact in advance, not in consequence.
It's a very, very good statement. So I'd like to highlight for our listeners some of the things that you mentioned. You know, I'd like to just pick out a couple points to kind of reinforce for them. One is that, and I've run into this situation where some government, you know, state, federal, county buyers in the U.S. have restrictions on the materials that they can buy, need to be U.S. made. But part of USMCA is they can be U.S. or USMCA made. And so that can be a real benefit for companies that are selling into that those markets. And I don't think, you know, people necessarily understand that. The other thing that I think you talk about that I wanna highlight for people is that even though you're, let's say you're importing from China into Mexico, you know, and you're able to produce enough to change the substantial category, the HS code or the value of that product for country of origin, that doesn't eliminate the all of the regulations on the Uyghur Forced Labor Prevention Act or some of the requirements for CTPAT and other businesses. And the same with exporting. I think it was a great point that you had as yes. Mexico is a great base for exports for, you know, to the rest of the world because of the trade agreements. But OFAC regulations on exports, U.S. OFAC regulations and regulations under EAR or ITAR, you have to know who the end customer is. So just because you're selling it to a distributor in Mexico or a partner in Mexico or your own subsidiary that is a Mexican company and they're further sending it on, if it falls under those export compliance restrictions, then you still are, you still need to be careful, right? You have to double check who your Correct. Customers are, how that business is running. So if nothing else, we're near the end here. We're at the end of our time, but I think you've given us a lot to think about, Alejandro, and, you know, some really valuable points that I don't know that, you know, all of our listeners had been aware of before this discussion and podcast. So I encourage everyone to find Alejandro on LinkedIn. His name and spelling and everything is in the podcast show notes. And reach out to him, you know, in the company he's working for. And as I said, he's not only a professional and very experienced in this field, but he's continuing to educate and himself and, you know, gather more information and more capabilities and qualifications. So one of the reasons I asked Alejandro to be on this podcast is because of that, because I could see from his background that, you know, he's extremely capable and technical and knowledgeable in these areas. So thank you so much for being with us today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you very much, Kimberly.
That's all for this episode of the International Trade Resource Podcast. We hope you found this discussion insightful and informative. To find more episodes and more information on all things international trade, check out our website at www.intltraderesources.com. Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast and leave us a review on your favorite platform to help us spread the word. Join us next time for more exciting insights on the global marketplace. Until then, keep thinking globally.